Salam dear listeners and welcome once again to Vahini Satsang. So today we are in the fourth session of summarizing whatever we have discussed for more than 100 episodes. Today is probably the 107th episode of this series where Bhagwan's grace we have spent time ruminating on his first Vahini, Prema Vahini, for all these weeks. And when you revisit these paragraphs, when you read again, every time it is such an ennobling experience, every time such new revelations, new insights and new determinations fill you to walk on this path. In the previous occasion, you had Brother Sai Prakash who summarized for you the first 9 chapters of Prema Vahini, and then I did the next 9 chapters, 10 to 18. And in the previous episode, you had him again and he summarized the chapters from 19 till 27. And today, I'm here back again to summarize the last 3 chapters, 28, 29 and 30. Of Prema Vahini. And as I mentioned to you before, every time you read this, beautiful threads emerge, threads of understanding, threads of connecting to what Bhagwan has said to our own lives. So if I begin with chapter 28, there Bhagwan clearly enumerates what is the characteristic of a sadhaka. And in one line, Swami says, a sadhaka should be always focused on attainment of truth. He should not search the unreal in this evanescent world. A sadhaka lives with that conviction that everything around me is what it is, but it is not the truth. I am not after what is there around me. I am there after what is it that is the basis of everything around me. If you have seen the little video that we did for Shivratri on Radio Sai, we had titled it The Shiva Principle. And here Bhagwan very beautifully explained through an analogy the truth of everything. And Swami said, just like when you go to a movie and you are watching on the screen various scenes unfolding in the film. So suddenly there is floods in the screen, and suddenly there is an earthquake, suddenly there is a tsunami, suddenly someone is crying, someone is in jubilation. And Swami says, when the flood happens, the screen does not get wet. Or if there's a fire in the scene, the screen again does not get burnt. There can be lava emerging out of a volcano, but the screen is not affected. But at the same time, you are able to witness everything only because there is a screen. Otherwise, without the screen, you won't be able to see those scenes. You won't be able to enjoy that movie. There is no basis for that movie if you don't have the screen. So everything happens because of that basis, which is the screen. And Swami says, so that screen is the divine. That screen is the truth. So when you look at all those scenes, and if you know that, you know, this is all unreal, just like when you look at a movie, you know that everything is unreal, then it does not affect you. It's not, you don't really start crying buckets if someone is crying, weeping in the movie. I mean, yes, sometimes you get carried away, but otherwise you know that that's a movie. That is not real. So keeping our focus on the truth of everything that we see around us, that is what a sadhaka should be doing. Because Swami says there is no true living, there is no satyachara, because the world around us actually is a false world. So true living consists in the realization of the Lord. This must be borne in mind by every person, every moment of their life. This is what Swami says in chapter 28 of Prema Vahini. In fact, that reminds me of a beautiful conversation that I had many years ago with Mrs. Rani Subramanyam. She is a sadhaka. She is someone who has spent in the divine physical proximity of Bhagwan many years, and someone who was a truly sincere spiritual seeker who made the most of her time in the divine presence for her spiritual upliftment. So many of us have got this chance of physical proximity. Of course, it is a macroscopic minority when you compare to the number of devotees who know Swami. But even if you see the number of people who have had the physical chance of touching Him, knowing Him, even that is a huge number. But the people among that group who was really sincere spiritual aspirants, who knew the value of what they're getting and how they should make the most of it, were perhaps not many. And Mrs. Rani Subramanyam, thanks to Bhagwan's grace and guidance, she was someone who was very focused on her spiritual progress. Every moment with Swami, she utilized it for this. So in the early days of Prashanta Nilayam, Swami used to spend a lot of time with a few devotees. And so one Swami asked her, "Do you have any domestic problems?" And she said, "Yes, Swami, I have." Then Bhagwan said, "Do you know how to transcend them?" She said, "No, Swami, you have to tell me." Then Bhagwan began to explain. Swami said, "See, when you have a dream, do you realize that you are dreaming?" She said, "Swami, I realize I was dreaming only when I wake up." Bhagwan then asked, "Until you wake up, do you not identify with the dream as yourself?" So when you're dreaming, you know, you think that dream is real, isn't it? During those moments, you completely identify yourself with everything that is happening in your dream world, because you don't know that you exist separately from that. She said, "Yes, Swami, until I wake up, you know, completely we identify ourselves with that dream." Then Bhagwan said, "See, in the dream, you feel that you are real. You are not aware that there is another I sleeping on the bed and which is dreaming. You are not conscious of this fact. You are not alive to this fact. But in reality, actually there are no two I. There is no one dream I and there is a sleeping I. It's only one. It's only one I which is there." So Bhagwan was saying that just like there is no a dream I and there is no a real I, it's actually one I. There is only one person. But when you dream, you think that that is real. When you come back to consciousness, you think this is real. And now Bhagwan said, once you wake up, once you know that that is a dream, then you don't feel anything about it, isn't it? It doesn't affect you at all, because you know that that is not I. That is not I. That is just a dream. You don't identify yourself with it anymore. Then it does not affect you. Swami said, how your night dream does not affect you. Now think of what you are going through now also is a dream. Swami said, that is a night dream. What you are going through now, this is a daydream. That's all. This is also a dream, because this is also false. Just like the dream is false, this world also, which you think is real, even this is false. You think this is real, but this is not real. All your domestic problems, Swami said, they are in the realm of your dream. Think of this as a dream. You should keep telling Swami, this is all a daydream. Swami said, if you constantly keep telling yourself, this is just a daydream. This is just a daydream. Why should I be affected? I am not this. Just like you don't identify yourself with a night dream. Swami said, once you keep doing this, then all these problems will not touch you. But if you identify yourself with all the problems, then you will suffer. So all you have to do is you should know that this is just a daydream and you're just playing a role. That's all. Whatever name you have, it is just a false identification. That is not I. This is just the body. This is not the real me. You have to keep telling yourself, Swami said, I am playing a role, but my real nature is Atma. I am above all this, Swami. Swami said, keep meditating on this thought. This is not me. I am just doing some things as part of my duty. That's all. I'm just playing a role. My real nature is Atma. Swami said, if you think like this, then problems will not affect you. As Swami once told one student, that problem is there in your consciousness. But once you think like this, then there are two things now, problems and consciousness. Once you think like this, then the problem just is not there anymore in your mind. You know, the problem just disappears. Once the problem disappears, Swami said, then what remains is only consciousness. And consciousness has a way of finding solution to everything. But if you identify yourself with that problem, then you will go down with your problems. You will suffer, you will be anxious, you will be worried. Because what is unreal you are seeing as real. You are actually above all problems. I said, yes, you're not able to realize this because you haven't reached that stage of consciousness. You're judging every experience from the level of the body. And Swami said, I have not descended to help you with problems related to your body consciousness. This is so significant. Whatever Swami does, he does not do anything for just our body. He's looking at our Atma. He has come to emancipate us, to connect our soul back to the super soul. So Swami is saying, you have to help yourself constantly by saying, this is all a dream, Swami. This is all a dream. And Swami says, in spite of you repeating yourself with this dictum, still if you're not getting that awareness, what you should do is you should pray to Swami, please give me that awareness. Please give me this awareness. And Swami said, I'm always ready to give you whatever you ask. But you have to ask. I will not give everything all by myself. But I will give whatever you ask. But the thing is, if you ask for the right things, I will definitely help you. If you ask for the worldly things, I will give them those also to you. But the thing is, you will get only more caught up in Maya. You will get more caught up in illusion. However, if you ask, I will give you. But if you ask for the real things, then I will give you that experience of how everything is a dream. And once you get that experience, nothing will touch you. When we identify ourselves as the Atma, then we go above the body. But when we identify ourselves with our body, then we go below and get submerged in our problems. Once we identify ourselves with the Atma and we go above the body, then no problems affect us. So, this chapter 28, Bhagwan begins by saying that the characteristic of a sadhaka is to always know that he is after not the unreal in the evanescent world. He is after the attainment of truth. And that is why instead of getting enslaved in the false world and wasting time in the pursuit of the world, he will dedicate every minute to the discovery of the truth and in the contemplation of the everlasting, ever true Lord. He knows that the human life is very precious. It is like a jewel in the hand. It should not be dropped. And when he knows that there are so many ways of saving oneself, he will not lose the chance. Swami says time is running out. for all those people who are, even though in the human bodies, are fostering animal tendencies and evil traits, because they're just losing this chance. And once you have lost the time, later on, it will be very difficult, because later on it will be like the house has caught on fire and now you're digging a well for water. The human birth, Swami said, it is a result of many meritorious acts in the past. And it is not only the right thing to put the body into the right use, but it is also one's bounden duty. It is our pursuit of truth is not just the right thing to do, it is our duty to do. That's what Swami is saying in this chapter 28. We have to know the preciousness of this human birth. In fact, this is what is there in the very first chapter of Premavahini also. In fact, this reminds me of an incident that a brother had narrated to me many years ago. So back then in the 70s, Swami used to spend a good part of the year, almost 9 months, in Vrindavan, in the college in the Bangalore campus. And many students joined at that point in time only for this chance of being in the physical presence of Bhagwan. So one student from the northeast was so keen to become a Sai student that in an effort to please Bhagwan and prepare himself for this opportunity to become a Sai student, you know, he did many sacrifices. He gave up non-vegetarian food. He started waking up early in the morning. He stopped hanging out with friends. So he tried to make his life as Sai student-like even before he joined, because he thought, if I do all these things, Swami will be happy and Swami will take me into his college. That was the keenness in him to join Bhagwan's college. And thanks to Bhagwan's grace, he did get admission into the college. And once he joined, it was not difficult for him to adjust to the rigorous schedule in the hostel, because he already was mentally prepared for this. He had physically prepared himself for this, and he came from a farmer's family, so he was used to getting up early. So he adapted himself to the hostel routine like fish takes to the water. So he took it upon himself to ring the bell for Suprabhatam. So he was not just happy, he was in fact one of the people who was so comfortable with the hostel routine that he started taking duties in the hostel. So he was the one who would ring the bell for Suprabhatam every day. As we know, in the hostel, all the activities are done by the boys and the girls in the Anandpur campus. So this boy was the one who should ring, wake the boys up for Suprabhatam, for morning prayer. In fact, many boys would leave chits around his bed to wake them up at different timings in the morning. Some boy wanted to get up at 4 o'clock, somebody wanted to get up at 4:30 or 4:45 because they want to study or something. They would leave chits around his bed, and this is the first thing that he would do every morning. Go and wake each person up and then ring the bell for Suprabhatam. He was very happy doing this. He had also converted his cupboard into an altar, and he would daily do puja there with flowers, incense and so on. So 6 months passed in this manner, and the boy was very happy, he was very settled. So one day Bhagwan called him and Swami asked, how are you? How is hostel life? So with all the enthusiasm, the boy said, Swami, I am fine, Swami. Swami, I have become spiritual, Swami, he said. You know, because he was following the hostel routine and getting up early and doing everything that is mandated in the hostel. So he just said, Swami, I have become spiritual. And Swami said, oh, so what do you do in the hostel? And so very excited, he said, Swami, I wake up early in the morning and I ring the bell, Swami, every day. And Swami said, oh, you do it every day? He said, yes, Swami. Swami, I participate in the Suprabhatam wholeheartedly. In fact, you know, I lead the whole morning prayer session And then Swami asked, okay, so what about Naga Sankirtan? So I said, Swami, I go for Naga Sankirtan also. In fact, this boy used to sing, he used to play harmonium. So he said, Swami, I participate in the Naga Sankirtan without fail, Swami, every day I go. And in those days, of course, the Vrindavan boys used to go in the nearby villages in the early hours of Thursdays and Sundays singing bhajans, and Swami used to give a special darshan also for all the boys. So the Bhagavan looked at the boy now very keenly, and the boy was so excited, you know, giving his report card to Bhagavan. And then Swami asked, okay, how much do you talk? And the boy actually by nature was a bit talkative. So he said, Swami, I have curtailed it, Swami. Now I don't talk so much. I talk much less now. Then Bhagavan immediately said, what is the use? What is the use? Meter is always on. Only volume is down. Swami is telling meter is always on. Only volume is down. Which means, constantly there are things going on in your mind. It is just that you are not talking much, volume is down, but you know, your mind is in the same way all over the place. It is constant agitation going on in your mind. Constant activity there. That's a meter is always on, only volume is down. Okay, then Swami said, okay, what about being on time for lunch and dinner? Do they wait for you or are you there on time? He said, Swami, I'm always on time. So, now Swami said, okay, what about night milk, night prayer? And the boy said, Swami, every day I take the night milk, Swami, and I do the night prayer very diligently. So the boy was actually a picture of confidence, because everything that Swami was asking, you know, it was only yes, 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 because he was following everything. So he was so happy that, you know, he got this chance to present his impressive report card to Bhagavan about how he's following the hostel schedule. And now the boy was waiting with eager anticipation how Swami possibly would reward him, because, you know, Bhagavan in those days and even later, I mean, little things are so pleasing to Bhagavan. You have to do only very little and Swami will be so pleased. He will immediately give you something. He will give you a padamaskan. He will gift you something. He will create a ring for you, chain for you. You would have done a very little thing. Somebody would sing a bhajan. Somebody would have done some seva activity. Swami is all the time giving, giving, giving. And it is not very difficult to please Bhagavan. In those days, you know, you do little, small, tiny steps of service, tiny acts of love, tiny acts of sincerity, and Swami would be so pleased. And now here, you know, everything that he has mentioned, Swami has asked, he has sort of cleared it. And he was just waiting, you know, how Bhagavan would reward him, because that is how Bhagavan used to encourage with the boys. So, now he was looking at Swami with all the anticipation, and Swami also looked at that boy, and Swami was very pleased, and Swami smiled beautifully, and then Swami said, boy, so now you have become a human being. Keep it up. And Swami walked away. This is what Swami said. Okay, so you're doing all these things now. So now you are a human being. In fact, I remember how Swami used to say, boys should not keep going from room to room like cats and dogs. And Swami used to say that you should be steady. You should not be all the time agitated. You should not be constantly in a frame of mind where you are unable to be with yourself, at least for some time. Of course, at that point in time, the boy felt very sad. He thought Swami would create something for him, a ring, a chain or something. But all that Swami said is, okay, so now you have become a human being. But of course, now when the boy reflects on what Swami said, you know, this is what has guided him his entire life. Because even till this day, he follows this schedule. He wakes up early, he does his suprabhatam, he does his night prayer. Even 40 years later, the boy follows everything that he followed in the hostel, and it is because of the way Swami guided him. Let not the spiritual practices or devotional exercises we do make us feel more evolved than the others. Because that is in fact the minimum that we need to do. Because we are not animals with tails or we are not birds with feathers. A beautiful human is divine. So here Bhagavan is saying that a sadhaka should know the value of the human birth and he should make every effort to realize the true purpose of life, and the true purpose of life is to seek the truth. And Swami says it's not just the right thing to do, but it is our duty to do. So, one must realize in this body itself, before death takes its toll, the eternal truth and the relationship between man and that truth. And that is how Bhagavan referred to Kathopanishad in this chapter 28 of Premavani. Swami said, arise, awake and get initiated from the great. We have to approach great persons who can show us the path to understand the eternal truth, who can show us the self-illumined basis of all creation. If you are agitated about what to accept, what to reject, if you are not able to distinguish between what is light and what is darkness, what is death, what is immortality, Swami said you should approach people who are enlightened. But for this, what is a must is deep yearning and determined spiritual practice. And then Bhagavan goes on in the subsequent chapter, in chapter 29, to explain what is the difference between a sadhaka and a sahaja manava. A sahaja manava is normally an ordinary human being. And Swami very nicely takes this word sahaja and says an ordinary man or a sahaja manava comprises of sa, ha and ja. So what is sa? This is a sahaja manava, an ordinary person, is one without sahana. He is one without fortitude. Ha, he is one with ahankara. He is one with ego. And ja, the one who goes after jagat, who goes after the physical world, who is seeking to lead a satisfied life by going after desires relating to the jagat or the physical world. So that is a sahaja manava. Swami says, so a ordinary person, a normal person, a worldly person is one without fortitude, who is filled with ego and who goes after the desires of the world. And a sadhana manava, a sadhaka, a spiritual aspirant, Swami said, on the other hand, is characterized by sa, dha and na. What is sa? Swami says, sa is sarveshwara chintana. So, a person who is a sadhaka, like the waves of Sagara or the ocean, is ceaselessly engaged in Sarveshwara Chintana, who is constantly engaged in the contemplation of the Lord. That is sa, dha, dhana, one who accumulates the wealth. Dhana here is wealth. What is the wealth? The wealth of simplicity and the wealth of equal love for all. And na, Swami says, one who believes that nothing belongs to me and everything is the will of the divine. So if we say that we are doing sadhana, we should ask ourselves, are we in this mindset? Are we someone who is constantly thinking of the Lord? Are we doing Sarveshwara Chintana all the time? Are we someone who is accumulating the dhana, the wealth of simplicity, the wealth of equal love for all? Are we able to see everybody in the same way? Is our life according to the principle of simple living, high thinking? And are we able to offer everything to the divine? Are we in that consciousness that nothing belongs to me, that everything that is happening is because of the will of the divine? Sadhana. If we say that we are on the path of sadhana, we have to ask ourselves this question. Am I a sahaja manava? Am I someone who has ego? Am I someone who is going after the world? Am I someone who is without fortitude? Or am I someone who has this habit of constantly thinking of the Lord, who is all the time after accumulating this wealth of equal love for all, and who is constantly in a state of surrender to the divine, knowing that everything is the will of the divine. Swami says, a sadhana man, he will not yield to the general vicissitudes of life, like grief or loss, anger or hatred or hunger or thirst, because he will master all these urges. He will go through life with fortitude, with courage, with joy, peace, charity and humility. That is what a sadhana person will do. And then Bhagwan very beautifully also says, what are the definite no? What are the things that a sadhaka, a sadhana person, will definitely not do? He will not quarrel for every little thing. He will not lose his temper. He will not become sad at the slightest provocation. He will not get angry at the smallest insult. And he will not be worried about thirst, hunger, loss of sleep. That is what a sadhaka will be like. If you say that we are a sadhaka, we are on the spiritual path, we are doing sadhana, then we should ask ourselves, are we quarreling for little things? Are we losing our temper, because something didn't go wrong? Are we becoming sad because something didn't turn out? Are we getting angry because someone said something which we did not like? Are we constantly worried about, oh, how will I manage tomorrow? How will I manage with this payment that I have to make? How do I manage with less sleep? You won't be worried about the daily things of hunger, thirst, lack of sleep, Swami says, because a sadhaka is not worried about all these little things, because his focus is on something else. And if we say that we are on the path of sadhana, then this is something that we have to see. Are we following? We have to see that we don't quarrel over little things. We don't lose our temper. We don't get angry if someone says something to us. That we don't become sad for little things going wrong. And Swami gives a very beautiful example to illustrate this. Swami says there is raw rice and there is boiled rice. The boiled rice is soft, healthy and sweet. But the raw rice, unboiled grain, that is hard. That is conceited, Swami says. That is full of delusion. Both are jeevi, Swami says. Like, both are rice. But the person who is immersed in external illusions, that is the Sahaja Manava. He is like the raw grains, hard, full of delusion. And the person who is immersed in, Swami says, internal illusion, that is a sadhaka. He is soft, healthy and sweet like the boiled grain. No, he has, refinement has gone through his being. So Swami says the difference between Sahaja Manava and Sadhana Manava can be compared to the one who is completely engaged and lost in external illusions, worldly illusions. So that person is like a Sahaja Manava. But the person who is all the time absorbed in internal illusion, he is also in an illusion, but that's an internal illusion. That person is a sadhaka. And Swami says, but God is beyond all illusions. In fact, once even the sadhana person who is immersed in internal illusion, once he goes even beyond that, then he becomes divine. Swami says, then you become divine. Such a person's heart becomes the seat of God, Swami says. But a normal person is all the time busy in outside illusions, but a sadhaka is busy in his internal illusion, in his internal world. But you have to rise above that also, once you know what is real and what is not real. Swami says, just like when you look at your face, to look at your face you need a mirror. Similarly, you need to do this sadhana to see your real self which is devoid of gunas. You need that medium of sadhana to witness your real self. And once we come to chapter 30, the final chapter of Premavahini, Swami says, what should a sadhana person cultivate? If you say that you are a sadhaka, if you say that you are a spiritual aspirant, so what is it that you should cultivate? And then Bhagwan makes very beautiful statement. Swami says there is no penance higher than fortitude. There is no happiness greater than contentment. There is no merit holier than mercy. There is no weapon more effective than forgiveness. There is no penance higher than fortitude. Swami is referring to this sahana. As earlier also we saw, Swami said, a sahaja manava, an ordinary person, is someone who does not have fortitude. A sadhana person is someone who has fortitude, who can face the vicissitudes of life without getting affected, who has tremendous patience. Swami says, no penance greater than that. No tapasya greater than that whole aspect of perseverance. And then Swami says, there's no happiness greater than contentment. Who can be happy with whatever you have got? There is no happiness greater than that. And there is no merit holier than mercy, the compassion. There is no other good merit, the punyam. As Bhagwan has said, astadeshu puraneshu vyasasya vachanadvayam paropakaraya punyaya papaya parapidanam. So basically there is no merit greater than showing compassion. And then Swami says there is no weapon more effective than forgiveness. Many times we find it so difficult to forgive, but that is the most powerful weapon. It's very easy to take revenge. It's very easy to feel hurtful. Very easy to think, I have to do something. How could you do this to me? But can we forgive? And forgive with all our heart. Forgive so that the whole thing just evaporates our being. Forgive so that we attract goodness, so that we infuse into the universe a force of goodness and love. Can we unlock the power of love? That is what a sadhaka should be trying to cultivate, Swami said. Where do you cultivate? Swami says, your body is that field where you cultivate. Your heart is the plough. You have to sow these good seeds. Seeds of these virtues in your being. Once you sow these seeds, then the harvest will be what? Harvest will be the Lord Himself. I've said everything depends on our sadhana. Our sakshatkara depends on our sadhana. Just like the cream depends on the quality of the milk and the fire depends on the fuel, Swami says sakshatkara. For you to get the vision of the divine, for you to become one with the divine, it depends on your sadhana. But here again, Bhagavan says, even if sakshatkara does not happen, you know, many times we might think, someone might think that, you know, I cannot reach there. You know, it's too much for me. I don't think I can ever make it there. You know, it's too high a target for me. I am too small a person. I cannot think of liberation and all that. I cannot think of vision of the divine. There's too much for me to achieve. You know, it's like you ask me to climb the Mount Everest, you're asking me to do deep sea diving. I cannot do, I can't go to the bottom of the ocean. So Swami says, even if that does not happen, but once you're on the path of sadhana, Swami says, what will definitely happen are four things. What will happen is you will get company of the great. You will have good company. Second, you will learn to be content. You know, once you're in this sadhana, you will learn to be content. You will, definitely there'll be more happiness in your life. First, you'll have good people around you. Second, there'll be more happiness in your life. Third, Swami says that there will be truth. You know, automatically there will be truth in your life. And then Swami says, very easily you can control your senses. You know, most of the time all our problems are because we are not able to control our senses. You know, your eye wants to do something, your hand wants to do something, your skin wants to do something, your ears want to hear something, your eyes want to see something. So it's because of that only that we fall into problems all the time. Swami says, what will easily happen is there will be contentment, there will be good company, and then you will have more control over yourself. You will not lose control. So Swami says, it doesn't matter who, whether you're a householder, whether you're a recluse, a sannyasi, a grihastha, or you're married, not married, brahmachari, whatever you are, anybody, whichever class you may belong to, whichever caste you may belong to, whichever religion you may belong to, anybody who is on this path will experience these benefits once you're on this path. Swami says, in fact, the disease that an ordinary man, a Sahaja Manava, goes through is this worldly happiness. The enjoying this worldly happiness, that is actually a disease. And Swami says, the drug for that is suffering. So, when we are enjoying, quote unquote, enjoying this world, Swami says that is a disease. And for the disease, the drug is suffering. So, suffering is not the consequence. Suffering is actually the medicine. Because only when this medicine is given, when the suffering happens, that is when we do analysis. That is when we think, is this true? What am I doing? Why am I doing? Why am I suffering? Why is this happening? Otherwise, we don't even think. That suffering is what leads us to introspection. Very rarely we do introspection when everything is going fine. So that suffering is to transform us from a Sahaja Manava to a Sadhana Manava. Because only from that suffering comes this analysis, self-inquiry, and that is how the spirit of renunciation is born. Because once, if there is no analysis, there is no renunciation. If there is no renunciation, there is no liberation. In fact, way back in the 50s, two sisters came to Bhagwan. And in those days, they enjoyed plenty of physical proximity with Bhagwan. They were blessed in many ways. And both of them were very serious about walking on the spiritual path. Very sincere also in their pursuits. And as they continued to make progress on the path, many years later, one day, Swami called both of them for an interview. And Swami asked, both of you have done a lot of sadhana. And for all the sadhana you have done, you have reached a high stage. Your days are packed with chanting, bhajans and sacred reading. And then Swami said, but in spite of all this, you have not reached the stage that you should have reached. Do you know why? Bhagwan asked. And both these sisters, they were taken aback. Because it is definitely not good news for them. Swami was telling, you know, you have not reached where you could have reached in spite of you leading such sacred lives. So they tell Swami, please tell us. We thought we are doing our sadhana well, but somewhere we are not doing things the way we should be doing. And then Bhagwan, very lovingly, gently, Swami said, see, sadhana itself will not take you there. You should combine sadhana also with self-analysis. Because only self-analysis will tell you where you are going wrong. Often we don't think and act from the level of the Atma. We always think of ourselves in terms of our body relationships. You know, that we are a father, we are a mother, we are a brother, we are a sister, we are a husband, wife, whatever. Swami said, it is self-analysis which will help you identify mistakes and tell you where you have failed spiritually. If you don't do self-analysis, you cannot progress. You know what? Now you should cut down your sadhana to 1/4. Whatever you're doing, japam, dhyanam, chanting, you reduce that to 1/4. Make it 3/4 self-analysis. Continuously act. Continuously examine yourself. How am I talking? What am I hearing? How am I eating? Everything that I'm doing. Am I doing the right thing? Am I doing the spiritual thing? Am I thinking the right way? Am I talking the right way? Am I able to lead all my senses every second of my life in the right direction? You have to keep asking, self-examination, Swami said. That is what will help you to grow quickly. If every day you can just keep doing japam and dhyanam, but it's good you are spending the time sacred way, but constantly I have to ask, am I doing everything with my focus on the Atma? And Swami said, simplicity is a must for this path. So make your journey comfortable with light luggage. Don't have too many possessions. Keep it to the minimum so that you don't give your mind to various things. Do not add more and more to your life because, you know, they might become obstacles in the spiritual path. So true spiritual pursuit is to examine every thought, word and deed on the touchstone of pure love. If we pass this test, we progress. Otherwise, all our activities are purposeless. So this is what Swami said to those sisters. So here in chapter 30, Swami is telling you have to do self-analysis and that will lead you to cultivating the spirit of renunciation. And once renunciation happens, only then it will lead you towards liberation. You will know that I have to give up greed, which is like being a dog. I have to give up anger. I have to give up untruth. And I should eat food in moderation. I should sleep in moderation. And I should ensure that everything happens through love. And I have cultivated fortitude. Then Swami says you will have no room for weak-mindedness. You will have no fear. You will remember the Lord with a steady mind. And you will not have any desire other than the Lord. Other than to become one with the Lord. And then in chapter, this last chapter, as Bhagavan is talking about being a devotee, Swami says a devotee or a devotion person who is a bhakta, he will uninterruptedly contemplate on the Lord no matter what he may be engaged in. Because you will feel that everything is the Lord's creation. And you will embrace all with equal love. There will be truth in your speech. That is the characteristic of a person who is a bhakta. And once you are a sadhaka, you become a bhakta. And so there's no difference actually of a bhakta and a sadhaka. Because a sadhaka or a bhakta will constantly think of the Lord. He will embrace all with equal love. And he will see everything as God's creation. And Swami says when you're talking about a devotee, among all the nine paths of devotion, Namasmarana, just chanting the name of the Lord is the best. And that is how Jayadeva, Gauranga, Tyagaraja, Tukaram, Kabir, Ramdas, any number of devotees, they have had the vision, Sparshan, Sambhashan, Darshan of the Lord just by chanting the name. Swami referred to Dhruva, Prahlada, any number of, in fact, in our own contemporary lives, you know, we have seen any number of devotees getting so much grace and blessings from Bhagavan just by chanting his name and by purifying their heart. And Swami says, just for a sadhaka, just these three are enough. Just chant the name of the Lord. Make the name of the Lord very breath of your life. Take the vow of service and cultivate equal love for all. These are three things. I feel, you know, these are three for any Sahi devotee, perhaps. Chant the name of the Lord. Make Sairam the breath of your life. Do service. Take the vow of service. And cultivate equal love for all. Love all, serve all. Equal love for all. Swami says, there is no other better way for liberation. And then comes a very beautiful thing that Swami mentions in chapter 30. Swami says, it is not the nature of a sadhaka to search for faults in others and hide one's own. If your faults are pointed out to you by anyone, do not argue and try to prove that it is right, or do not bear a grudge against that person for it. A sadhaka should always search for his own faults, her own faults. If someone pointed out a mistake, you cannot rationalize it for your own satisfaction and think of wreaking vengeance on that person who pointed it out. Those are certainly not the traits of a sadhaka, because a sadhaka always thinks about how I can purify myself. So he should make every effort to ensure that good is maximized and negativity is minimized. And then Swami says the do's and don'ts of a sadhaka again. A sadhaka will never go through depression, doubt and ego. Ego go, depression go, doubt go. A sadhaka can never be someone who is constantly plagued with depression, doubt and ego. Swami says, once you are established in devotion, even if these things happen, even if you get depressed, even if there's a doubt, you know, they'll be dismissed easily. In fact, it'll be difficult for any of these things to enter you. But if they enter you, then they will disrupt your progress on the spiritual path. So a sadhaka, Swami says, will never be affected too much with this depression, doubt and ego. And a sadhaka will always seek the truthful and be joyful. In fact, Swami says, and this is a very, very powerful sentence that Bhagavan writes in the chapter 30. Swami says, above all, it is best that a sadhaka under all circumstances is joyful, smiling and enthusiastic. Swami says, in fact, this noble attitude is superior to even bhakti and jnana. This is something which is very profound. Swami says, if you are joyful, enthusiastic and smiling, then what you are doing is you are walking on a path which is superior to even bhakti and jnana. Even, I mean, there is nothing higher than that, Swami is telling. So joyful, enthusiastic and J-E-S. If you are sadhaka, you should say yes to jess. J-E-S. Joyful, enthusiastic and smiling. If you cultivate this jess, you'll become like Jesus. You should say, sadhaka should say yes to jess. Be joyful, be enthusiastic and be smiling all the time. Swami says, those who have this will deserve to reach the goal first. They will reach the goal first. If you can, come what may, smile. Come what may, be enthusiastic. Come what may, be joyful. Swami says, this quality of joy at all times is a fruit of the merit acquired by from many past births. This is the thing that is. A sadhaka is one who is not all the time thinking and is lost. A sadhaka is one who is all the time smiling. You have known God. You have touched God. You are being God. You know that God is there with you to solve everything. You are not alone. You are the most happiest person on earth. That should, how a sadhaka should be. Swami says, if you are all the time worried, depressed and doubting, then you can never attain bliss. No matter how much sadhana you do, you will never attain sakshatkara. Swami says, the first task of a sadhaka is the cultivation of enthusiasm. Through that enthusiasm, you can derive all ananda. You will be like a spiritual lion. You will not be affected if someone praises you or get deflated when someone blames you. You are not affected. And you will be steadfast. Whatever inconveniences may happen, you will be steadfast on your sadhana. And it doesn't matter to you what name of the Lord, what fame of the Lord, whatever name and form you choose, you are steadfast. You stick to that. You know very well that everything is just one. These are just means for cultivating one-pointedness. And Swami says, such a person, he will not mix what is external and what is internal. In the sense that many times what happens is we mix our worldly joys and sorrows with our spiritual practices. You know, we think that I am doing all these things, but how could this problem happen to me? Swami says both are different things. Your worldly joys and sorrows, that is external, that belongs to the realm of the physical world. Your japam, your meditation, your chanting, your good deeds, that belong to the internal world, that belong to the realm of the love of the Lord. You cannot mix these two. You cannot say, I'm doing this, why did this happen? Or I'm doing this, why is that not happening? I'm doing something, I have done this much of japam, I have chanted the name 108 times, how could this sorrow affect me? Both are different, Swami says. You cannot mix them. Swami says, a pure devotion, to not mix them is what is pativrata bhakti, pure devotion. Swami says, if you mix them, keep connecting them, then it becomes vyabhichara bhakti, that is polluted, unchaste devotion. You don't change, come what may, just like you eat, sleep, drink, same way you should do your sadhana, at the same time, same place, unaltered. Cultivate that sadhana, Swami says, then you will attain the Atma. This sadhana will give you the Atma. In fact, Swami ends chapter 30 with this thing, that be steadfast, don't mix. Cultivate that sadhana, fortitude, and ensure that you build this wealth of sadhana, this sadhana, move from being a Sahaja Manava to a Sadhana Manava, then you will experience the Ananda that is out of this world. You'll become one with Paramananda. So that is how Bhagwan leads us on in Prema Vahini. With so much of Prema, with so much of love, Swami has given us this precious way. In fact, to me, if not anything else, as Bhagwan here says, if we can all the time be joyful, if we can all the time be enthusiastic, if we can all the time come what may know to smile, I think that will bring a smile on his face, and that smile will go a long way. It'll take us miles towards our path to liberation. I think that is what we should be praying to Bhagwan to cultivate. Swami says that is even superior than even bhakti and jnana. So what else do we need? Knowing that whatever happens, it's all illusion. Outside world is false. The truth is I belong to a realm of the love of the divine. And because I belong to that realm, I am not affected with whatever happens. And I will always smile. I will always be joyful. I will always be enthusiastic to serve, enthusiastic to chant, and enthusiastic to see that I have equal love for all. I think if you have that kind of an approach, then whether we get Sakshatkara or not, as Swami says, you will always have happiness, you will always be content, you will have control, you will have contentment, and you will always be in good company. And I think that is what we want to do. We want to lead a very, very happy life, and that is what sadhana will do to us. So dear listeners, I've tried to share with you whatever were my takeaways from this chapter 28, 29 and 30 of Prema Vahini, the last three chapters. And we do want to continue this Vahini Satsang, and we'll pray to Swami to guide us further. There are so many Vahinis that Swami has written, and definitely we want to take this opportunity to dwell into all of these Vahinis and share the joy of learning the precious message that Bhagwan has given all of us. So do feel free to share your thoughts and your feelings and your experiences, your joys of walking on this path. If you have any questions or comments also, you can write to us. You can send your messages to our WhatsApp number 9393258258. Once again, 9393258258. Or you can also send us by email. You can write to listener@radiosai.org. Thank you so much for being with us through this journey of Prema Vahini. I pray and hope that our lives become this stream of Prema. With so much of love, Bhagwan has written this, and He's there with us with that much more love to help us walk on this path. Swami says, if you ask for the right things, I'm waiting to give you. So let us ask for this Prema, and let us become one with the Prema, so that everything that we see around us just becomes a play of love. And one day, we become one with this love, just like the wave becomes one with the ocean. Thank you so much. Sai Ram.